This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. Visit FUBARradio.com for more details.
Mark Dolan eats the news on FUBAR Radio.
Rosetta. Sweet Rosetta fat. She thought she was a cleaner. But she was a frying pan. Yeah, the picture. The picker. Picks with the fingers, great. Okay.
Bye. like everybody else. Be like everybody else. Just be like everybody else. Be like everybody else. Just be like everybody else. Be like everybody else. Just be like everybody else. Be like everybody else. Just be like everybody else. Just be like everybody else.
The news on FUBAR Radio.
Hello, yes, apparently I'm Mark Dolan and this is Mark Dolan Eats the News. Let's get cracking. I've just had a croissant and you don't want to be here when my blood sugar drops. Facebook have just announced they now have over a billion users a day. I know it's taken over my life. I received a letter in the post the other day and I tried to like it. In a set of beefed up anti-terror laws, the government wants to be able to study the browsing history on our computers. Personally, I don't think it's right. It's clearly your girlfriend's job. ITV have had hundreds of complaints saying its big budget new series Jekyll and Hyde is too scary. Surely we all knew it was going to be scary. It's like complaining boxing has too many punches and Towie is too easy to follow. I don't know. When it comes to Jekyll and Hyde, I'm in two minds. Thanks. You're welcome. Pop icon Robbie Williams has spent £21 million on a mansion in Beverly Hills, which allegedly has 22 bathrooms. Either he's very vain, or that IBS still hasn't cleared up. Chinese families will now be able to have more than one baby as it ends its notorious one-child policy. The good news is it means the Chinese version of Family Fortunes will no longer be 5 minutes long. It was a vintage 31st of October as adults and children of the UK alike dressed up to celebrate the biggest Halloween ever. Oh my God, some local kids turned up at my doorstep. I was terrified. Teeth missing, stitches on their face, blood everywhere. Not makeup, just inequality. We made every effort. We prepared well to make the house ghoulish, I must say. Spooky cobwebs everywhere. We did this by firing the cleaner 2 months ago. Apple, the world's largest technology company, has reported profits of £7 billion in the last year. £7 billion in the last year. CEO Tim Cook was going to tweet the news, but his iPhone just ran out of power. And also, it was all bent. It just didn't work. A cafe owner in Dublin has barred vegans from his cafe after they complained on social media about his menu options. The vegans were going to fight the ban, but in the end, they just didn't have the energy. A BBC insider has been secretly recorded alleging that half of BBC staff have drug dealers who deliver cocaine, ecstasy and other stuff straight to their desks. There has to be some truth in it. I mean, someone was high when they recommissioned doctors. Woody Allen has received a surprising tribute from his first wife, Arlene Rosen, who has not spoken of her short-lived marriage to the comic genius for over 50 years. She wrote, "Wondrous Woody, you inspired me with your enormous energy, creativity and charisma." Clearly, Woody has the Midas touch when it comes to wives, because he's like his father to his current one, Suni Previn. X Factor's ratings are at their lowest level since 2004, on Sunday being beaten by the Antiques Roadshow. Simon Cowell has been encouraged to compete by introducing ancient relics worth an absolute fortune into the show, but apparently Louis Walsh won't return. absolutely no ancient relics in the studio today, because on today's Mark Dolan Eats the News, I'm joined by a woman with her finger on the pulse of news and social media, the blog's editor of the world-famous Huffington Post, Jodie Thompson. Welcome to FUBAR.
Hello there.
It's great to have you. You tweeted to your legion of followers on social media that you're coming on the show and that you hope you don't make a tit of yourself. That's a direct quote.
Yes.
That's my job. You don't have to worry. Also with us today is a Liberal Democrat who has much in common with his fellow colleagues, i.e. he's not in Parliament anymore.
Ha ha ha.
That said, he's the only Lib Dem you're still allowed to like. It's the very excellent Lembit Opic.
Here. Good recovery, young man.
Nicely done, I tell you. I'm an improviser. Lembit and Jodie, welcome to the studio.
Our pleasure.
Let's kick off with snooping. So here we are. We've got the Home Secretary, Theresa May, who wants to have access to our browsing history. Lembit, is it a price worth paying to make us safer?
It's ridiculous. We go to war, sometimes some would say illegal wars, to protect our freedom, our independence and our privacy. And in order to protect our freedom and privacy, they're going to take our freedom and privacy away. Good job, Theresa. She's a very good Home Secretary when it comes to being a Conservative, but that's why I don't vote Conservative.
Yeah, so you feel that politically she's on it, but when it comes to our good as citizens, not so much.
Technically, she's exceeded my expectations in terms of her competence. I think she's pretty competent, but I just don't agree with the idea that you take people's liberty away. You know what? There was a story a couple of weeks ago where GCHQ, the spymaster's central headquarters in Cheltenham, actually asked people to use simpler passwords because they were having trouble getting into our emails. Come on, man.
Yeah.
It's just ludicrous.
It's a free country, isn't it? It's a sort of high comedy, like a comedy of errors. Jodie, what do you think? Because obviously we know there are these threats out there. Mm-hmm. There are people that wish to do us harm.
Yeah.
If you've got nothing to hide, you know, who minds if they go on your Yahoo or your Hotmail?
But it's the bigger picture, isn't it? You've got to protect internet freedom. That's what it's there for heaven's sake. And surely the security agencies have enough skills and powers already. They've already stopped countless terrorists.
Well, they claim to have done.
Well,
it's always, you know, smoke and mirrors. You know, you can't prove a negative. Oh, we've stopped this from happening. So I'm not disagreeing with you. Mm. I just think that we're given this endless diet of fear. And that's been used to take our freedom away.
I think they've already got enough powers. Well, are we
convinced that this will work? Because if I was a terrorist, which I know is a mental leap, okay.
You're a little terror.
I'm a tinker rather than a terrorist. But I obviously wouldn't communicate via email if I knew that the email was being looked at. Surely that's the solution.
A lot of them do, don't they? I mean, you see all the ISIS recruiters are all on Twitter, especially the Western ones. And that's been pretty easy. And the forums that are, even on the dark web, it's really easy for the security forces to access them. So,
but this is completely consistent with how our country is run. They wanted to reduce gun crime, so they introduced, they banned the handguns. What are you going to do if you're going to rob a bank? Oh, I must get a gun license. Yeah. I don't think so. We could walk out of this studio and probably have a gun within half an hour. Same goes for this. I just cannot buy that you take people's privacy and freedom away when you're defending privacy and freedom. Way wrong answer.
You're only talking about what? A percentage of the public, like minus percentage almost of the public. You know, there's a tiny amount of people, and yet these powers are going to be across the whole population.
And there's corruption in the system. The problem is that this assumes there's absolutely no corruption in government. Well, I think I beg to differ on that one. So therefore, if you want to be a baddie, you go and work for the people who access our phones. Not complicated. You don't need the GCSE in spying to work that one out.
Well, I suppose you have to decide, don't you, whether you'd rather someone in the civil service who's helping to combat terrorism snooping on your email than a hack from News of the World. Because in a sense, it's the same thing. It's just this time it's for our well-being, so they say.
But, I don't really buy that as an argument, to be honest. Apart from the fact no one's really hacking anything anymore when you're talking about the press.
Really?
I think, no.
Really?
I absolutely don't think so. I don't think anybody
dare. I wonder whether there's what we've sort of learned from this is that social media and communication via electronic means, such as email, is just never going to be a private thing. It's obviously in the public sphere. Maybe as sort of users, we just have to accept that we are in the public sphere, that someone has access, and if we want privacy, it'll just have to be in your own home.
amid the four walls of your own living room.
Why don't you just give up then? Let's give up. Let's go and tell everybody every naughty, embarrassing personal thought that we have. Let's tell everyone when we go into the toilet. Let's tell everybody when we've told a little lie. It's just not how society can work. Fine, I mean, if people really take this, if you've done nothing wrong, you've nothing to fear attitude, go ahead. But the difficulties are, summarising, and it's really serious, profound point, there's corruption in the system, and as long as there's corruption in the system, this can be abused. And secondly, I've got the right to secrets in a free society. I've got the right. And frankly, I pay tax to a government to serve me, not to spy on me. So go home and think again.
Okay, well, it's compelling. What about paedophiles?
What about paedophiles?
Well, because this is also, this sort of access will help the authorities
to combat.
Okay,
but this kind of access is presuming
grooming.
Everybody's guilty before they're innocent. I mean, that whole argument, well, if you've got nothing tied, but no. This level is not necessary.
And in addition to that, exactly right. In addition to that, look at the number of leaks that have come out from state authorities, from people hacking into our private information. WikiLeaks has proved that there isn't any justification for the state stealing our data, because it could quite possibly end up in the public domain anyway. Any angle you look at this, it's just wrong, wrong, wrong. You know what we could do about terrorism? We could stop declaring war in countries and causing terrorists. We could stop having provoked the existence of ISIL. A much smarter idea, rather than trying to close the stable door once the horse is bolted.
Just by talking about this, are we playing into Theresa May's leadership campaign for the Conservative Party? Is this actually more politics than anything else?
It's making a statement, isn't it? It's showing
because
that
she's been very noisy recently. It's
her heels.
It's probably those famous, what are they, sort of leopard skin sort of
her kitten funky heels.
It's about the only part of her that's in any way sort of less terrifying than the rest of her, because she's quite a formidable personality. But clearly she's posturing for the top job, isn't she?
Yes, this is why it's an ideological debate. Theresa May is perfectly entitled to take the contrary view to what we're saying here in the studio. Perfectly entitled to do it. And it's a big test. What does the Conservative Party want to be? If they want to be the authoritarian snoopers charter party, she's a good candidate for this. As I said before, I think she's competent. I respect her. I actually quite like her as a person. But I just don't agree with this attitude that anything is allowed in order to try and protect us from, actually not from ourselves, but from inept government foreign policy. That's why they want to snoop on us. And, you know, if people want to give all the information they want to the government, then Theresa May would be a good Prime Minister.
I'm inclined to agree with you. I think your argument that this would all be a brilliant idea if it wasn't for those pesky human beings in charge of it, because it's always, if you give enough power to us as individuals, there's a few rotten apples in the barrel. However, it would, I'm imagining, as a policy, play quite well in the country, do you think?
My view, I'm interested to know what the Huffington Post position is, because you are always delightfully irreverent about these things. My view is that for the Conservatives that Theresa May is trying to appeal to, it probably is quite popular. It will work when you say, well, I've not done anything wrong, I'm not planning to be a terrorist anytime soon. But really, it just doesn't work that way for me, because at the end of the day, the uncomfortable truth in a liberal society is you're allowed to do stupid things, embarrassing things, and you're allowed to get away with them as long as you don't harm anybody else. This actually introduces the fashion of judgment from a distance.
I would go over there and give you a hug, but there's a massive desk between us. I'm not allowed. I'm supposed to be neutral, but I am inclined because the principle of freedom is fundamental to our society. And you look at this, and this is something that I would imagine that the Communist Party do in China.
Well, as I'm sure you're aware, the Huffington Post UK does not take a political position per se, but we're all about internet freedom. I mean, that's part of the reason why the Huffington Post was set up in the US, was to expose things that weren't being covered by the mainstream media there, politically speaking. So we're always going to be on the side of internet freedom. So yeah, fundamentally, I don't think we can agree with this.
Okay, let's widen this out to social media. Facebook have announced extraordinary figures. First of all, a jump in their profits. So finally, it's actually a profitable company after it floated to some sense of anticlimax a couple of years ago. However, now they've reached that tipping point of over 1 billion users a day, which is quite extraordinary. Do you use Facebook, and also could you live without it, if so?
No, it's actually part of our work. on the Huffington Post, you cannot comment on a story or a blog unless you have a Facebook account.
Right.
We did that to try and stop anonymous trolling. So at least there's some idea that it's a real person that's putting the comments on. And we use it absolutely fundamentally as part of our day-to-day job. So, I could not be without Facebook.
Among the most fun things about the Huffington Post, and it is irreverent, Lembit's right, is are the comments.
Uh-huh.
Because it's nearly as entertaining as the articles are the comments, except when I've written a blog and then I don't enjoy the comments. But now here's the thing: privately, do you use Facebook as well?
I do. Yes.
Yeah.
I've been on Facebook since 2007. I can't believe that.
But that's old school. Yeah.
That's a long time.
You've probably got your actual name as your because
I've
got some terrible long thing because I was very late to the party. I'm like Mark Dolan 77. I like lollipops.
No,
Dolan.
I do have my own name, but that's been something I've done consistently. I've signed up to things even if I thought they weren't going to work, just in case they took off.
Yes.
So I tend to have accounts in my own name, even on Pinterest, though I'm never on Pinterest.
Okay, well, you've got all bases covered. How about you, Lambert? I'm curious what your view is of social media.
My view of social media is like my view of air. You can't get rid of it. It's probably pretty handy, and some people live by it. I have to confess, I just can't get into Facebook. It looks like I'm active on it, because my Twitter account goes into my Facebook account.
Oh, that's the worst kind of Facebook account.
Well, I don't even know. I don't know what a good Facebook account is. I mean, I could talk to you about... I do motorbikes. I work for Motorcycle Action Group. I could talk to you about double overhead camshaft reciprocating valve sprocket modulation units, and that probably means as much to you as Facebook stuff profiles mean to me. But I do Twitter, but I'm a binge tweeter.
Right.
I'll be silent. I think I've kicked the habit.
Yeah.
Then after 10 days, suddenly I'm there.
But
Corbyn Warnings got me very active on Twitter, actually.
What I find, Facebook really is far more social, because I talk to my friends every day, and they're friends who could be in America, friends in Germany. Twitter's more like, you know, walking into a pub full of strangers and shouting at them.
Well, I think the problem with Twitter is...
Welcome to my world.
I know. I'm curious why Lembit particularly engages with Twitter as a platform rather than Facebook. And I'm imagining it's because it's a public platform and you're a public figure and people want to read your views on everything. My problem with Twitter is that when it started, it was great because I selected a few people to follow and the news feed was a source of material for me, and it was like having a newspaper.
That's why I joined Twitter as a reporter at the time.
Well, there you go.
I could get
But out of
stories.
Politeness, I've been following a lot of people back, and now it's just all it is, it's junk mail really that I'm having to sift through. And isn't there a sense that Twitter is consuming itself, whereas with Facebook it's a curated community that you've selected, personally handpicked.
Exactly. You don't have people on your Facebook that you don't know in real life, by and large, because what's the point?
Yeah, I think we're going to get Lembit on Facebook by the end of the show.
You could possibly do that. I like Twitter for two reasons. Number one, when people are writing absolute tosh about me, I put it on Twitter, what I think. I know that lots and lots of journalists follow it. So it's my direct access to people, and that's useful in terms of media. And the second thing is, it's all carbohydrate. This isn't protein. How on earth did the human race develop for 100,000 years without it? They weren't saying, you know, 2,000 years ago, if only we could have Facebook. If only we could communicate in some carbohydrate, where I really have to say it's empty calories way, with people all over the world. So for me, when I do it on Twitter, except when I'm trying to put the record straight, it's just a little bit of fun. I've got 9,464 followers. Follow me on Twitter, at Lemidobic. Follow me on Twitter, at Lemidobic.
He's very good at this
I want
point.
To get to 10,000. Why? Just because it's there. I could equally well might climb Everest for the same reason, but I'm not going to.
Nicely done. Well, if social media is carbohydrate, then Mark Dolan Eats the News is a lovely steaming creme brulee.
Mm. Mark Dolan Eats the News on FUBAR Radio.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio. It's Mark Dolan Eats the News in the company of Jodie Thompson from the Huffington Post, blogs editor no less, and also former leader of the Welsh Liberal Democrats, and many, many other things, including the public voice of the Motorcycle
Action Group. That's right.
Who are a very, very important group, because as we try to have cleaner air and we try to be more efficient and there's pressure on public transport, motorbikes, not a bad solution.
They're a great solution. They are eco-friendly. They are part of the solution to congestion, and they're quite cheap to run. We get very fed up with the fact that bicycles are the great worshipped means of transport, while motorbikes are actually economically more important. We don't have motorbike lanes. Anyone goes along the embankment? I'm sorry, I'm in a grouchy mood today.
Rant away.
I walked along the embankment yesterday evening at 9 p.m. chock-a-block. head to tail, car stuck, and five bicycles using half of the road space. Why are we giving a third of the road space to bicycles? Please, Boris, call in, explain that to me right now. Meanwhile, bikers, we just get on with our stuff, we deliver things, we don't make much mess, and also we're jolly nice people.
And I'm thinking we're probably not far away from the advent of the electric motorbike.
They already exist. I rode one called the Agility, Toyota Agility R last year. 120 mile range, it would do 110 miles per hour, where permitted, of course. So we're going to get there. And what's interesting is the blurring of the relationship between bicycles and motorbikes, because you've got electric bicycles now. Where do they fit in?
Well, that's right. I browsed, my motorbike was disgracefully thieved from my home a few months ago, and I considered an electric bicycle. So this will just be a regular bicycle with a lithium ion pack on it. And I spoke to the guys, and they said, well, the really good ones do about 25 miles an hour. Mm. You think, you just, well, there's no license plate required. There's no DVLA involvement. That's right. As you say, at what point does the electric bike stop? And I suppose, ultimately, the authorities will just have to catch up on that. As the technology emerges, a decision will have to be made.
Now that they've wrecked the traffic flow in this city, and they really have, I'm not against cyclists, really, but I'm totally against this obsession with giving 2.6% of the traffic 35% of the road space, people will get wise to this and they'll go, actually, we can use electric bicycles in these empty bicycle lanes. Mm. And that's when it's going to get a bit tricky. But it's a rod for our own back. It's going to cost us billions, frankly, the obsession with bicycles. But as I say, I don't have any shares in any motorcycle company, but buy a motorbike. It's a good way to get around. And here's an interesting little factoid. When bikes were allowed in bus lanes in London, the accident rate for cyclists went down by 11%. So we are guardians of our pedal two-wheel chums.
Look out for them like a bigger brother with a big helmet on. Jamie, where do you stand on the bicycle revolution? Because I would have thought, until I've heard from Lembit, it looks like only good news. But according to our friend here, it's a disaster. What do you think?
Well, actually coming here, the cab driver was absolutely ranting about the embankment, ranting about bike lanes. And in my experience, in my, gosh, however many years in London, the traffic has got so much worse. So cycling's not helping with the congestion. That's just purely from someone who goes around in cars. Mm. I cycled all the time before I moved to London. When I moved to London, I didn't dare. So I have never cycled in London. My bike just rotted in the shed.
But isn't a sort of cycling superhighway going to attract you back onto the road?
No, because the number of times I almost get knocked over as a pedestrian trying to cross the road, I'm still not going to get on a bike. But what I will say, my experience, as I say, I'm not a cyclist, I'm not a motorbiker, but my best friend is. Now, she lives out in Hersham. She would never get on a bicycle to work over in Canary Wharf, where she does. So motorbikes absolutely make sense for her, whereas a bicycle never would.
Now, this show is broadcast across the United Kingdom, and it's a conversation which is relevant to all of our major cities in Glasgow, Edinburgh, Manchester, Liverpool,
and Norwich.
Cardiff.
Because that's where I lived before, and I cycled there, and it was brilliant for cycling.
Well, Norwich and East Anglia, that whole area, there's a lot of sort of Cambridge, of course, is like Tokyo these days, isn't it? So the question, though, is, I suppose for all our major cities, it's a big question for our infrastructure, the future of the motor car, and also, and this is another story which emerged this week, which is the closure of London's largest taxi training centre. So this is where somebody decides to be a black taxi driver to drive an official Hackney carriage will do their 3 years of knowledge learning every street in London. Now it's closed down partly due to financial pressure, and they argue the popularity of Uber. So this is another question where it's another part of our transport infrastructure which is in transition, which is the humble cab.
Mm. And having had this conversation as well coming in here today,
I'm glad you're prepped.
I use Uber, hands up. Sometimes it's brilliant, sometimes it's absolutely dreadful. But I probably use black cabs more because I like the fact they've done the knowledge, they've learned, they've not just got an iPhone in the window and following Google Maps.
Do you like paying double, though?
No, I don't, and that's the problem. And they have to catch up. They can't sit on their laurels anymore because it is market forces at the end of the day. But what I don't like is the fact that there is no kind of vetting policy with Uber. That worries me as a woman.
They are catching up. There's a system called Get GETT.
There is Get. It's good. Halo.
What's it called?
Get GETT. Mm-hmm. You can Google it. You can sign up. And then it becomes quite competitive, to be honest with you. They've got very good deals there. I like black cabs for exactly the same reason. I'm romantic about it. Black cabs, London, it just makes sense. I was in an Uber cab. It's my friend had, and it came to £87.
Right. Ooh,
I just thought it a little bit steep.
Pressed the wrong one.
I don't know. Maybe he pressed. I watched it in passing. I didn't have to pay it, thankfully, but it was quite expensive. expensive.
Well, I've got Limbit down as an Uber XL.
I think so. Yeah. Lux,
definitely.
Even.
Uber exec. Look at you.
No, you're
a public figure.
I got my motorbike,
you've got to be
man.
Careful. You'll get mobbed otherwise. You can't sit. You're like Noel Gallagher. You're not safe on the tube.
Oh, yeah, that's actually right. There's an angry mob outside at the moment. So why did you
not
lose
angry.
Your seat?
Not
why
angry.
Did you lose your seat? Lots of angry Welsh people. They wanted me to be an MP, but I'm not bringing my personal grief here.
No, I think
cyclists will be running me over.
Baying fans you've got to worry about.
I've got an interesting little transport factoid, a second factoid for you. Something called Starship was launched on Monday. It's an Estonian invention. That's why I know about it. My parents are Estonian. It's actually going to do away with some of your shopping trips. It's a little robot which will bring you your shopping. Now, that is a real congestion buster. It's like a box with wheels, six wheels, cute little thing. You'll find it on Google. That is the future of those small little shopping trips. When you want to get a four-pack of lager during the football match, you just tap it into your machine. 15 minutes later, little Starship will be at your door.
This is a rival to Amazon's famed drones, I'm assuming.
Yes, drones aren't... Yes, it's problematic
because the
to
drones
fly
worry
around.
Because they're airborne, and I'm concerned
they're
about
they're airborne,
that.
Energy hungry. The Starship is super friendly, yeah. And it'll talk to you as well, and it'll actually speak to you. Really friendly. There you are. There's a free plug for Starship.
I'm very pleased to hear that. Before we move on to technology, we've got a big technology story which I want to draw your attention to, but just finishing up on social media, Essena O'Neill is a young, she's a teenager, she's 18, she's a very pretty girl, and she's got a following of over 600,000 followers on Instagram, and she has dramatically quit the platform because she said that it has essentially, the whole process by which she has been tweeting photographs of herself has been entirely commercialized, and she said that she was being paid to promote clothes and drinks and had taken some of the selfies more than 100 times to get the right stomach sucked in shot. Mm-hmm. O'Neill said the pictures served no real purpose other than self-promotion. To her credit, she's bitten the hand that feeds her by closing down the account that, you know, had in the direction of a million followers. And she started a website which is all about veganism, plant-based nutrition, environmental awareness, social issues, gender equality and controversial art. And it's called Let's BeGameChangers.com. Does this sort of send up a warning flare about social media and about the lack of authenticity in a lot of it?
There's two questions that are raised here. The first thing is, this was, I think, Australian, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Correct. That would actually be breaching the Advertising Standards Agency's codes of conduct over here. Now,
Mean that I can't tweet saying I've just ridden a Yamaha motorbike and it drove beautifully? Please,
that's
buy
nice
it.
Work.
You're not supposed to, unless you declare that it is in fact a sponsored tweet.
Is that right?
That actually breaches guidelines. So you've got an awful lot of bloggers out there that aren't aware of this, that are blithely breaking guidelines all the time by plugging stuff and not being transparent the fact that they're being paid. But the second thing is the fact that people really can just create entire personas that are completely fake. I just came across somebody fairly recently that has basically created this persona that doesn't exist. He's even created his own fan Twitter account. He's created his own supposed management company, but he actually created the website. It's this whole elaborate...
It's remarkable. And why is he doing it?
Because he wants to be internet famous. He's describing himself as a presenter, but he hasn't presented anything.
I don't know. It just sounds a bit like the Kardashians Mark II, doesn't it? Just one big construct of nothingness.
Well, no, they've always been very transparent, haven't they?
Well, they are very transparent people, yes.
But no, they've always said that they don't do anything in particular, but they've built a business on not doing anything in particular and being famous. So, yeah.
And it sounds better than Keeping Up with the OPIX. Just doesn't sound right.
Oh, I don't know. I think ITV2 are looking all over that one at the moment.
No reasonable offer refused.
Absolutely.
And I'd be paid for that if I'm not breaching the rules. I think this woman's quite interesting. Obviously, it's not self-promotion at all to set up her own website called letsbegamechangers.com. That couldn't possibly be self-promotion. And it's nothing to do with the fact she says, please support me because I can't afford my own real life. Problem is, lots of people are regarding this as real life. Let's go to the pub. Let's meet face to face. That's real life, my chum.
There you go. Will, on that very firm note, and on that rather dictatorial note, from Lembit.
Don't go to the pub then. Please yourself.
Let's talk about Vladimir Putin, who has been declared the most powerful man in the world by Forbes magazine, with Angela Merkel replacing President Obama in second place. Lembit, who makes these lists, and how on earth do you How do you quantify power?
Well, this list reminds me of a list I was in. In 2010, I was voted the second most unpopular man in the United Kingdom. That was before...
Wait a minute. I'm going to cheer you up. You were also runner-up for Rear of the Year as well that year. So swings and roundabouts.
Well, I got the bums rush then, didn't I? See what I did there? Boom. No flies on me.
That's anyone. Lembit.
Going a bit too far down the track there.
Bringing his A game today.
And I thought to myself, who made that list up? Oh, by the way, Peter Mandelson was the most unpopular that time. These lists are a little bit of fun. When you said Putin declared the most powerful man in the world, I assumed you meant Putin said that. But in fact, Forbes is probably right. Putin is, whoever made the list up, we underestimate Putin. He's really popular in his country. And he's only doing his job, whether you like Russia or not, whether you like Putin or not. He's fabulously popular in Russia. He's given Russia pride. And frankly, at the moment, he looks like the most likely person to sort out some of the problems in the Middle East. So I don't rubbish the fact that Putin's in that position. What I am concerned about is we tend to ignore him. And we're hypocrites. Because when Putin does military stuff, we say, oh, that's terrible. But it's all right for us to do it. And so lots of reasons why I think we should give him a bit more respect than we do.
Well, it's interesting. Question Time a couple of weeks ago, Jermaine Greer was on. She was on fire that night. So many different headlines came out of her appearance, for better and for worse. But she's made a similar point about China, saying don't patronise and underestimate the Chinese, and look at how China as a state has tackled its own appalling poverty, you know, absolute famine across the country, and rehabilitated and turned it into what's going to be the most powerful country in the world. So, Putin, you pulled a querulous face when Lembit was being positive about Putin.
I just can't get over the human rights record. I'm sorry. I can't get over the fact that he promotes homophobia. I can't get over the fact that, it's as much as, yes, it's not a communist state per se anymore, but it's still very totalitarian. And
well,
it
in a way,
make
isn't
me
it,
happy.
Isn't it worse than being a communist state now? Because isn't it a sort of market economy, but with devastating inequality? Isn't it worse?
It has got devastating inequality. I would remind you, we have a record number of people here in the United Kingdom who depend on food banks. We have enormous inequality in this country. I understand why Putin is the bête noir, the person we attack, but winners write the history. It's not in the West's interests to talk up Putin. He's stable, he's not mad, and he's played a great, cute game as a politician. He's basically been in the top spot for over a decade. Then, in that sense, we ignore him at our peril. And I do a little bit of broadcasting for a Middle East channel, and I realised the extent to which we see everything through a Western filter. And I would have no hesitation in saying Putin is much more stable than some of his predecessors, and more than that, he's just, like I said before, doing his job. And it wasn't Putin who went to war in Iraq, killing maybe 1.5 million people. If you actually look at the death toll in terms of Western adventures abroad versus Russian adventures abroad, we lose hands down every time, right back to the time when the Russians pulled out of Afghanistan. And look at the mess we've made there as
well. So if we're saying sort of Putin out, it's a case of be careful what you wish for.
Yeah, absolutely. But more than that, when we say Putin out, he's got just as right to say Cameron out or Obama out.
Isn't it strange that he's allegedly a billionaire, even though he's either been a politician or a civil servant for his entire career? He must have been very hardworking, an awful lot of monthly bonuses. Horrible corrupt regime. I mean, he's president for a while, then he becomes prime minister, then he's president again. He and his mate just divvy it up. Who gets the gig next time around?
Yes, a good point, actually. Yes. You never see him and Med in a room at the same time.
No,
you don't. But anyway, what you've done is, clearly he's not like flavour of the month, but at the same time, we should just be careful before sort of blindly dismissing his role in international affairs and also the possible stability herewith.
But I also agree that, you know, Forbes have got it spot on, because it's not just Russian foreign policy that we're talking about, is the fact that they control so much natural energy that we're totally beholden to them in so many ways.
We're not going to declare war on a country that can turn off our gas.
Well, exactly.
Who just frees us out? And just the other simple, obvious point is, my opinion, no one is as good or as bad as they're portrayed in the media. Not even me.
Apart from Nick Clegg.
Actually, I had a chat with Nick Clegg 2 days ago at the Charles Kennedy.
Have you made up? Memorial.
Well, I said to him, would you like to come onto my show on a rival channel, but not at the same time? And he said he wasn't doing much media at the moment. I can't keep grudges going for too long. And I'm not going to make that joke again. Why did Nick Clegg cross the road?
Go on.
Because he promised not to. I'm not making that joke anymore. Because at the end of the day, he made his mistakes and we all move on.
I tell you what, we like a bit of harsh humour here on Mark Dolan Eats the News.
Mark Dolan Eats the News on FUBAR Radio.
Yes, indeed. It's Mark Dolan in the company of Lembit Opik and also Jodie Thompson from the Huffington Post. It's 12:40. Let's look at the North-South divide. Babies born in the poorest parts of England have a lower life expectancy than children in war-torn Lebanon, a new study shows. Boys in Blackpool, Manchester and Burnley can expect to live for between 74 and 76 years compared to 78 years in the Lebanon, 77 in Slovenia and 78 in South Korea. Jodie,
yes.
Will George Osborne's much publicised Northern Powerhouse project fix the North-South divide?
Well, I obviously I'm not that well up with exactly how far he's got with the Northern Powerhouse. It depends who you talk to. But surely an awful lot to do with this life expectancy is to do with diet. Now, obviously diet is inextricably linked with poverty and affluence and whatnot. But there's an awful lot to be said for the fact that when you look, Scotland's not included in this, of course. But yeah, is it diet related rather than purely economics? I don't know.
Well, this conservative push to the north, it does feel like politics if you look at the fact that north of the Birmingham, there isn't a lot of conservative support. What do you think is behind George Osborne's posturing on the north, and is there anything in it?
Well, the posturing began when they were trying to win the general election, and they made all kinds of promises secretly off the record. I don't think they thought they were going to win.
Right.
Now they've got all kinds of promises to keep, everything from the EU referendum, where David Cameron's four just demands have really nothing to do with people really concerned about, and the same goes for this Northern Powerhouse. They were trying to win seats in the north. Credit to the Tories. It was the most stupendous general election result in my adult life. It was absolute blinder. You can't take that away from them. But this Northern Powerhouse is a legacy of them trying to get those votes. I don't disagree with it. I mean, I used to live in Newcastle upon Tyne. I was in the council there. I love the city.
Yeah.
But it's clear that there's less wealth there than there is in London and elsewhere. The most, the place to live, if you want to live the longest, apparently, is in Kensington, 83.3 years. Unfortunately, I'm an S short of that. I'm in Kennington.
All right.
That little letter will probably make a big difference to my life expectancy. But at the end of the day, the Northern Powerhouse is a nice idea. I'll not be holding my breath to see what happens.
But could you tell me, because I honestly don't know, it's talked about and talked about, has anything concrete actually happened?
Because what we're looking at, this is supposedly a big investment in the manufacturing infrastructure of the north of England, isn't it? It's also giving local authorities much more of a budget in which to invest in businesses. And then, of course, there's the infrastructure, that there's the actual transport solution, which would be HS2, which gets you from the south to the north more quickly.
But only to Birmingham so far.
But then there is a speculation of a connection between Manchester and Leeds. And
the powerhouse is... that's got some investment in it. It's presented as a great strategic thing. I'm not that optimistic. That's going to make a huge, big difference. HS2, that's the next thing I'm going to rant about. HS2, billions upon billions of pounds to do something which you could actually do by simply having bypasses to some of the existing railway links. If you actually take an existing Pendolino, for example, from London to Glasgow, and you don't stop, you'll get there faster. Then HS2 is going to do it. And who's going to be able to afford it? Think about this also. You come in from America, you land at Heathrow, there's a connecting flight from Heathrow to Edinburgh. You say, no, I'm going to go into the centre of London with all my bags and take the HS2 for the rest of the journey. I love technology, I love aviation, I love transport, but HS2, that's not going to make a big difference.
I'm actually in an area where they had to send me the consultation documents because it's going to be quite close to my house. And my main problem all the way through answering these questions is the man in the street going to be able to afford a ticket? Because otherwise, what's the point?
Yeah.
Now, my mum lives near Peterborough, so I'm going from King's Cross to Peterborough when I go and see her. Peterborough is, 45 minutes on the train from King's Cross?
Yeah.
Guess how much a return ticket is during the week?
to Peterborough, I don't know.
30 quid.
£110.
What? That's shocking. I'm really, I'm shocked about that.
Yeah.
That's, you get to Edinburgh for that. You get to Alicante for that.
You'd be lucky to get to Edinburgh for that because it's the same train company.
That is remarkable. I mean, I suppose...
I actually went to Edinburgh and it was cheaper to fly with British Airways than it was to take the train.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I don't mind train travel. I have to go up to the Midlands every week and you can get some pretty good deals. But just like you're saying, Jenny, HS2 is going to be mind-numbingly expensive. And if you're going to spend all that money, you know what, it's quicker just to go to London City and fly up anyway.
But isn't it nice just to have a bit of a vision that finally the government, various governments, have just made a call to say we're going to have a fast train that, you know, shrinks the country, because we don't have enough Grand Projet in this country. So maybe it's not perfect, but at least it's something.
Let's just consider how much this is costing. Let's consider the fact that aviation is expanding by 5% per annum. There's no point the environmentalists pretending it's not happening. Mm. It is happening. And then let's work out the real cost of HS2. And if it's just going to be a posh train set for rich people who can afford to use it, it doesn't really do anything for redistribution of wealth or anything like that. I say we should have get on with building the extra runway. It's just obvious that if you're landing in a hub, you're going to make the last part of the journey with a flight and start improving our roads.
Do you think
and
the third
also not have a cycle lane from here to Edinburgh before anyone thinks about that?
Just asking for you, you've got your the inside track at Whitehall. Do you think that the third runway will happen at Heathrow?
Definitely. Well, I think it probably will happen in Heathrow. One of the problems, and I've written about this, I actually write for a magazine called Flight Training News. One of the problems is Heathrow has been very positive in their campaign. It seems obvious to me it makes sense to build the first new runway there. Gatwick has been wholly negative, knocking copy, even in the evening.
Is it just too far away? Is it just too far away, Gatwick?
It's not too far away, but they'll both need to have an extra runway eventually. Let's not pretend otherwise. Within 20 years, they'll both have to have an extra runway. All that, or either that, or people will just fly to Schiphol and Charles de Gaulle. No saving their environment. But Heathrow seems to come out best at the moment. And for Gatwick and others to gainsay it, Gatwick understand why. You know, they're just trying to get the runway next. But for them to keep knocking it, it just damages aviation as a whole. Look, Gatwick people, stop being so negative about it. Bide your time, you'll get the runway. When I'm Mayor of London, I'll scotch all this whinging about the extra aeroplanes. Everybody who lives in the flight path to Heathrow knows the airport.
I love this.
And also, going back to trains, the Gatwick Express is an oxymoron. So, that's
the cost of it.
Yeah.
It's quicker to walk. Yes,
yeah,
I know. And I love this. Former politician, Libert Opic, saying to other public figures, please don't play dirty.
Yes, I can say these things now. Poacher turned gamekeeper. I've never played dirty. I was not a dirty politician. Some of my best friends are in other parties. I'll have you know.
Nicely done. We do have this dovetails slightly with one of those depressing stories about the London housing market, and it's the news that a shed in Peckham has been sold for £1 million. Now, London, it just isn't sustainable, is it? So, actually, is the good news story that comes out of the wacky London housing market that eventually this country is going to have to become a federal state? Now, I can feel OPIC nodding like a Churchill insurance dog on this one, because I know that Liberal Democrats...
Yes.
For at least... That was quite good, wasn't it? Man of a thousand voices. For at least two decades, the Lib Dems have stood on a platform of making Britain a more federal place. Chuka Amuna, who was a previous Labour leader hopeful, Chuka Amuna, which
for
also...
Days,
by the way, I should point out, is also my favourite song from The Lion King. He has... Thanks, I'm here all week. He has...
it's in the past.
Just written for The Guardian about how Britain should become more federal. And ultimately, you know, bringing all these things together, transport infrastructure, north-south divide, the housing market in London being unsustainable, a properly federal Britain is the answer, isn't it? So that people go, do you know what? I'm creative. I'm a graphic designer. I can't afford the rent in London. I shall move to Birmingham or Manchester or Leeds or Cardiff or Belfast.
Well, that's what's happening already. So many of my friends have moved out of London, it seems, as soon as they have children, it becomes unviable.
But are they near London, and isn't that the same thing?
No, I've had friends who've moved to Bath, I've had friends...
Really?
Well, quite a few friends moved to Bath, actually. So no, you're not talking about near London, you're talking Brighton, you're talking Hastings, you're talking out Margate Way, all over Kent. So
yeah.
Definitely, it's happened already.
But you can't...
Is it inevitable, the federal Britain?
I think that we're inevitable in the really long term... Probably. But in the short term, I don't think the country really wants it. There were various referendums around England to see whether we should federalise the English part of the UK. Mm. Massively defeated, 4-1 against. People don't really want to break up England. Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland, they have their own regional assemblies. People tend to think in England of Westminster as their government. I don't really see there's much momentum for it. When there was the vote for another constitutional change, which was a change to a proportional system of voting, it was pretty widely defeated. So whether people like it or not, the reformists are going to have to wait a little bit longer. And frankly, it's back to the other thing. If you really want to help the country do well, then we need to have proper transport connections. One of the things we could have mentioned was BAE is talking about a 4,000 mile per hour hybrid rocket jet engine. Well, that would take you from here to Edinburgh in 8 minutes. Now that really brings the country together. Probably that's
but
not exactly going to happen.
What I would like to hear from you, Lembit, if you were ever to become the Mayor of London, what would you do to fix the housing problem and the ridiculous situation that we're in, that large swathes of London are vacant, mostly empty because it's all owned by foreign people, foreign investment?
What we've created, the simple answer to that is I would stop making the acquisition of property into the asset that it is now. It's a haves and haves not.
But how do you do that? You're a Liberal Democrat. You believe in the market.
It's like value rating. What you do is you don't tax. You actually tax property in a way which makes it much less attractive for people, moguls, to collect it all up. I won't go into the whole, this is an old mantra of the Lib Dems, but essentially what we say is you shouldn't be able to get wealthy just by buying up property. The land belongs to the people, we say, and the land should be taxed in the public interest. That would be the Lib Dem response. The other part is house building. We've just got to build more houses. Every government talks about it.
And they don't do it.
They don't do it.
Why don't they?
Because it's incredibly expensive, and in order to fix our housing problem, we'd have to build like 100,000 new houses
every year.
And then you've got the problem, where do you build them?
That's right.
And then you get into the brown belts. And also
the NIMBY culture, which is endemic in this country.
It's got worse now. It's banana now. Build absolutely nothing anywhere near anyone.
Right. Crumbs.
That's
tricky. Crumbs. That's a short. By the way, touching on your potential mayorship, is this a serious consideration? Because I think you could definitely add to the debate about London if you entered.
I am getting so fed up. I tried to stand for the Melty's Lib Dem candidate last time round, and I was scotched by those who didn't want to see me the ascendancy, but the Lib Dems did really well. They got 4%. Yes, indeed.
Brian Paddock.
Yeah, it was Brian Paddock. He said he would never stand again. I don't dislike the guy, but it was obvious to me that the campaign wasn't going to get very far.
He's not a proper Lib Dem either, is he?
He's all right. He goes to my church sometimes. I get on fine with him. But the problem is, I'm getting so incensed by the traffic. I know this is a UK-wide station, but I am so incensed by the traffic problems we discussed before. Sooner or later, someone is going to stand up for the powered vehicle users and say, I'm standing to get some common sense. And Jodie said she's a powered vehicle user, car driver. Someone's going to get up and say, I'm standing for people, the hundreds of thousands of people who just think that we've gone nuts when it comes to traffic. You know, they're using congestion charge to increase congestion. That's basically what's happening. So there is a space for a common sense candidate. And if one of the characters who are putting themselves forward grasp that nettle, they could do very well. I might stand, I'm not sure.
I think we here at FUBAR could get behind Lembit Opec. Mayor, what do you think? As long as he comes and does his weekly audience on FUBAR Radio.
That I think we could make some kind of deal there.
Commandeered by yourself, Jodie Thompson.
I'll do a bit for Jodie as well. The HuffPost, I love
Well,
it.
We do. We wish you good luck if that comes off.
I'll keep you posted.
A quick word on the party now, post-election, post-Armageddon. Tim Farron, the new leader, he's got a job on his hands. Are you a fan?
Yes, I have a curry with him most Tuesdays when he's free, and we've been doing that for almost a decade. I'd like to think it had something to do with his original election in Westmoreland and Lonsdale, and he used to deliver leaflets to me in the dim and distant past 25 years ago.
Wow.
So I'm a fan. He's grassroots. He's got a huge job, and I did warn that the party would collapse the direction we went. No point in going over that again. But at least he does really understand what it means to deliver leaflets and to be a normal, humble Liberal Democrat, somebody who puts the people first. But, you know, we went from 63 under the late 62 MPs under the late Charles Kennedy down to 8 under Nick Clegg. And I did put my money where my mouth was. I published a book in 2011 saying this would happen. It's not very satisfying to see a quarter of a century of my work just going up in smoke like that. Very, very disappointing, very frustrating. So what will the party do? It will grow. It's bound to gain seats at the next
election. So you don't think it's over? You don't think this is a steady decline?
No, it wasn't a steady decline. anyway, that driving into a wall is a sort of gentle accident, really. And it was a dramatic, absolutely catastrophic night. Mm. Catastrophic, unpredictable. That's the thing. I said it was going to happen, but it was like the difference between what happened to the Lib Dems and the Titanic is the Titanic only lost a third of its complement. It lost two thirds of its complement. We actually lost 7/8. So in that sense, it has been absolutely appalling. It'll take time for the party to get back. The reason the party will survive is because it's a movement. It's liberalism. There are lots, millions of people who genuinely are liberal, libertarian. That's what got me into politics. Unless people give up on freedom, they won't give up on the party, but it's a long way back.
And also, somebody that will probably do the most of the heavy lifting for the Lib Dems is Jeremy Corbyn, the leader of the Labour Party. Because he creates a gap in the market.
He does. I'm a Corbyn fan because I think that he is one of the most unambitious people in politics. He's ambitious for an ideology, and I really respect that, actually. I love the Corbyn warnings. I mentioned them before.
What are they?
They're basically a satirical Twitter feed which just highlighted how much Corbyn was being blamed for everything. It had things like Corbyn obsessed with destroying the moon, warn MPs, and another one was traces of Corbyn found in Lancashire water, warn scientists, and
fantastic.
Corbyn likely to explode if stored at very high temperatures, warn doctors, and all this
brilliant. Talking of which, I do think the sexy Jezza Twitter account is well worth a look at. Actually, that's
now this
spectacular.
Is this casting in a different light? Is he a bit of a secret crush? Is that what he is?
He is to an awful lot of people, yeah.
Mm. Because a lady likes a man that doesn't try too hard, and he definitely does not try too hard.
Wears a vest.
Oh,
weathers.
I see. It's old school. You know, I suppose maybe
how
Corbyn,
do you know that?
Because you can see his vest at all
you
times.
You can actually. Prime Ooh. Minister's questions, definitely. Maybe it's maybe this is a kind of the post hipster thing. It's now it's the kind of the older
and the beard,
the guy,
yeah.
The sort of midlife crisis bloke.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I suppose the underdog in the UK, we do love an underdog. Underdog, don't we?
But he's more than an underdog. He's actually the real deal. He's exactly the same in real life as he is on the television, and to some extent so is Tim Farron. The great thing about Corbyn is you can disagree with him or agree with him, but the one thing that doesn't stick is when people say, oh, he has no policies. He has been utterly consistent for three decades, and you don't have to agree with the man to respect him. I happen to respect him as well, because I think
he's
a breath of
fresh air. But you don't agree. A cursory glance at your previous utterances on all matters of policy, I don't think you have any common ground with Jeremy Corbyn, do you?
I do. I think that he's right to say...
Trident?
I totally agree with not renewing Trident.
Really? Unilateral nuclear disarmament?
No, I wouldn't go that far. You talked about Trident. Mm. Let's keep what we've got. And somebody else suggested, why don't we if the submarines are getting old, just build the same ones off plan. We've already got the plans. So I agree with him that we shouldn't be spending billions on renewing Trident. We haven't actually got a target for that. That's not how the world works anymore.
As a journalist, though, Jeremy Corbyn's great news. I know you're neutral and I respect that, but it's great at the Huffington Post to have these characters, and Corbyn is a character.
He is, and also he's turned into the best troll at Prime Minister's Question Times. Just loving the repeated questioning about tax credits. It's just genius.
Now let's finish on Woody Allen.
Wow.
I need to rephrase that. Woody Allen's forgotten first wife, who he dubbed Quasimodo in his nightclub act, breaks her silence after nearly 50 years. This is Harlene Rosen. She was 16 when she married the total comic genius that is Woody Allen. She was bad with her timing because he just basically broke and became a superstar a matter of months after they split. Anyway, she's written a heartfelt message to her former husband, describing him as just a wonderful guy. I'll dig out the quote in a moment, but it's a rare bit of good PR for Woody Allen, that's the first thing. But it makes me want to ask both of you, are you on good terms with your exes? And Limbit, I don't mean Nick Clegg.
I never knew him like that. I'll tell you a joke about that after the show. Yes, indeed, it's a family show. I generally mostly get on with my exes. I have no axe to grind. I think that the cheeky girl was a great woman, continues to be a great woman.
Do you still know which one it was you were going out with?
They're twins. I always pretended I didn't.
I met both
Work
of
it
you.
Out.
Both
Work
of
it.
You met both of you when you were together, and you were a really sweet couple.
I still think very highly of it. People thought it was a fake relationship. It was a very sincere relationship. I was really heartbroken when it ended.
Yeah.
I'm not going to sit here and rubbish her. I went out with Sean Lloyd. She's going through a divorce at the moment. Do I feel happy about that? No. Why would I get pleasure out of somebody else's pain? And here's the weird thing. When people say, oh, I made a terrible mistake with that person. That person's terrible. 4 years of my life wasted. Well, you're a pretty crap judge of character if after 4 years you suddenly realise the person's no good. Obviously, all of the people I've gone out with had great, in my view, had great qualities.
I knew
And
it.
I'm not going to rubbish them now.
I knew he'd be a perfect gentleman. How about you, Jodie? Are you in touch with any of those those bounders and cards that have passed through your doors?
No, an awful lot of them, some of them are actually my best friends, especially the ones that we were together when you were like teen years and stuff like that. I think it depends on the relationship and actually what they did when it ended, because some people was just like, life is too short to have you in my life anymore. The vast majority, of course, I'm friends, because of course I'm an amazing judge of character.
Of course you are.
What are you doing after the show?
There you go, and romance blossoms. I've got to say, I don't want either of you to be exes on this show, because you've been fab.
Thank you very much for listening.
Great pleasure. Well, always. This was Mark Dolan Eats the News. We'll see you next week. Keep it FUBAR.